science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Classic. Classic intro. We are going to be changing this intro soon.
Oh, no. What are you going to put it at?
Keep tuned. We've got a little sponsor, but it doesn't start yet. So,
yes. So I heard about this.
We'll talk about it soon, but stay tuned. Okay. First up, ancient Earth rocks.
Okay.
Earth rocks found on the moon?
Earth rocks.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a surprising place to find bits of Earth. Yeah, but so it's one of the oldest rocks or oldest known rocks has actually turned up on the moon. And how do we know? Well, the astronauts obviously went up there in the late 60s, early 70s and brought back, many kilograms of moon rocks. Hundreds of kilograms, I think, of moon rocks in total. And most of them have been sitting in various cupboards and things around, mainly in the US, for decades now. And they've been studied to an extent, but as analytical instrumentation gets better and better and better, and the experiments we can do get more and more precise and accurate, we can actually determine a lot more about what's going on in these rocks
right.
that were brought back from the moon. So what they found is a 2-centimeter chip, little piece of rock, embedded within a larger rock that's been dated to about 4 billion years. So it's pretty old. Yeah. And it's been determined that this little chip of rock is actually originated on Earth, not on the moon.
What?
Yeah. And so this isn't that unusual, because we've actually found rocks from Mars. On Earth, we've figured out, and so these things are usually caused by asteroid collisions. So yeah. Sometime around 4 billion years ago, a big chunk of rock hit the Earth and blasted a lot of material out into space, and some of that obviously landed on the moon.
Right. Yeah? Okay.
And because the moon doesn't have an atmosphere, it doesn't really have weather or things that erode rocks. It just sat there
for a long time.
4 billion or plus whatever years, yeah? And at the time, the moon was actually 3 times closer to the Earth than it is today. So the moon is actually slowly receding by, you know, millimeters a year or something like that. But, 4 billion years ago, it was
much closer.
Much closer, so therefore much bigger in the sky.
Is that a problem that it's going further away?
No.
Okay.
Well, certainly not in our lifetimes or in the next, you know, billion years worth of lifetime. So I don't think we need to worry about that.
Probably won't be here then.
Yeah. So how did they do it? So they looked at trace elements in the rock. They looked at it's a mixture of quartz and feldspar and zircons. And these zircons have actually been found in Australia. And some of the oldest known rocks contain this mineral called zircon, which has been dated to 4 billion plus 4.5 billion years. So they're the actual oldest that we know of, but this is still pretty old. They actually look at uranium, traces of uranium, which mm-hmm. is radioactive, and they look at the decay of that uranium. They look at titanium levels, which tells you the temperature and the pressure when the rock was formed, and they other trace elements like cerium looks at the amount of water that was likely to have been present. And so they figured out that the rock probably formed in a water-rich environment with temperatures and pressures corresponding to about 19 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface. So whatever this big asteroid was, it slammed in so hard.
Really deep.
And yeah, really deep, and just ejected a ton of material.
How did that... I mean, so we're talking major force here coming down into the Earth so that it exploded enough to get out of our atmosphere.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want to have been... standing there, but then again, nothing really was at the time.
Right.
This was pre-life, I think.
Okay.
So it's been sitting there for 4 billion years, and it's interesting that only just 382, I've got the number now, 382 kilograms of rock was brought back, which is quite a hefty chunk of rock, yeah. But only a small fraction of it has actually been studied. And as techniques get better, you know, they expect to find more bits of
little
Earth,
clues and,
you know,
things
from that big hole.
I'm intrigued as to how you actually study rock. Do they have to break it up? And do bits and pieces on
not a geologist,
different
but
tests.
Yeah, you, I guess, break it up and study it with different wavelengths of light. You fire electrons at it. You look at the you can determine what materials are, what elements are in the rock. You can determine how they're structured, where they're sitting. You identify different minerals, how they're all sort of situated relative to each other.
Wow.
It's, yeah, that's geology.
Studying rocks.
Mm.
Okay.
Exciting.
The rise in fetal genetic testing.
Yeah, so...
yeah, so...
So, yeah, this so just gathering my thoughts for a moment there.
Testing...
Yeah, so parents or expectant parents, you know, obviously want to know whether the baby is going to be healthy, mm-hmm. whether there are any problems. And there's, you know... as a recent parent, you know, I wanted to know as much as possible about whether my kids were going to be healthy.
When you yourself were a
yes.
recent parent?
Yes, I am.
Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah. and so there's a lot of information that can be get. And historically, what doctors have done is a test called amniocentesis, where a little needle is put into the fetus and a bit of material is pulled out. And you can look at that material, but there's risks associated with that.
In terms of damaging the fetus,
yeah, it's rare, but it happens, I think. Yeah. And so, more recently, scientists have come up with tests where they actually look for little fragments of DNA from the fetal DNA that is in the mother's bloodstream.
Right. Okay.
Right, and they can identify that rather than doing some sort of invasive test
yeah.
on the fetus. And so there's all sorts of tests that can screen for dozens of spontaneous arising genetic disorders. Lots of examples, but Down syndrome is one, and there's many, many more. Okay. And so they wanted to sort of try and work out how reliable these tests are, and how useful they will be. Mm. So there was a recent study where they tested 422 samples from 131 clinics around the world, and some of the samples came from pregnancies with abnormal ultrasound findings. So you look first with ultrasound. If you see something, then you might go in
further.
Yeah, but you don't have to. You can do tests just as a matter of course. And others had no indication of trouble. So 32 of that 422 tested positive for some sort of genetic disorder. Yeah.
32
out of 422.
Okay.
Yeah. And the team were able to follow up on the outcomes from 233 of the pregnancies and found that of the testing, there were no false positives and no false negatives. In other words,
it was all accurate.
They got it right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's a long test, though. When did they follow up with the kids?
This was over the last couple of years, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the test will have to be repeated on a grander scale to nail down what risks they are and things mm-hmm. like that, and establish who would benefit most from this technology, because it will add expense to caring for a pregnant mother, but it seems inevitable that parents want as much information as possible.
Right. So this test is being done to find out what the risks are, even though these tests are already happening, right? Parents are already engaging in these tests. Or are they trying to figure out what better ways of testing for...
So in some countries, these tests are already being used. In the States, for instance, this is relatively common. In other countries, not so much yet, but I think it's going to move that way. And obviously they will tell you with a very high degree of certainty, if they come up with a positive, that your child will have X, Y, or Z genetic disorder. Here are the consequences. And at that point, you're faced with a set
decision.
Of choices. Yeah, exactly.
Because, do you want to go into the ethics of this?
We can.
Yeah?
Yeah. So, a lot of parents will welcome this, and... Definitely, speaking as a parent now, I wanted as much information as possible, and I think that's pretty going to be pretty likely for just about any parent. But obviously, the big decision is what do you do with that information? Mm. And obviously, if it's everything's negative, then you're all happy and everything. But if it's positive, then there has to be a much a sort of an expansion of the amount of counseling about this genetic information that parents get. Mm. And so that's going to add into
the costs.
Yeah. So if the test is going to, tests are going to come in and be expanded across New Zealand and other countries, then the associated counseling, genetic counselors and things like that will have to be made available too. And there is a shortage. There is a shortage of genetic counselors, and there also needs to be efforts to educate physicians and the patients themselves on what's available and what they can actually do with these results.
This isn't compulsory though, is it? Because I know that, like you said, there are a lot of parents that would welcome this, but there are a lot of parents who might just decide not to.
Yes, I mean, this isn't compulsory. You have to, it's an elective test. Certainly, so we had two children in the US and we elected to have these tests done. And in the end, we were glad we did, but it added expense to the whole process. Yeah.
Okay. Last one, the probable end of the Opportunity rover on Mars.
So this
they're just going to stop?
Well, this is a bit sad, actually. So if, I don't know if you remember, but about 15 years ago, in fact, 15 years ago this month, the two rovers landed on Mars.
I probably don't remember that because I might have been like 9 years old. But
okay. I don't see why you wouldn't have remembered. But okay.
I don't know. I might have been doing other things. Sorry.
All right. So 15 years ago, yes, these two rovers landed on Mars. One was called Spirit and one was called Opportunity. And they landed on different parts of the planet and they rolled out of their little capsules and started exploring. And they were really the there had been one earlier mission, which a much smaller rover that went about 2 meters and died. But this, these were expected to go for 90 days. That was the length of the mission. And they went considerably further than that, or they went for considerably longer than that. So the two rovers, Spirit lasted until, I think, 2013. So that was...
When you say last,
roving around Mars. This 90-day sort of rover was roving around for, what, nearly 10 years, and sending back data and sending back pictures, and eventually the solar cells died and the batteries failed and just died. Opportunity kept going, so Opportunity...
Is that rover still there? Is it?
It's sitting on Mars.
We've littered on Mars, essentially.
We have littered Mars, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, we have. Well, maybe we'll go there in the future and pick them up.
Okay.
Because they'll be sitting there. So in June of last year, there was a big dust storm that basically encircled the planet, blotted out the sun, which makes it hard for these things to operate because they rely on solar power. Yeah, and so Opportunity went into a sort of a hibernation mode, but it never came out.
Right.
Yeah, and they've... they've sent lots of commands to the rover, you know, over the radio signals, to try and retrieve it or revive it, but they haven't worked. And they were hoping that some seasonal winds that run between sort of November and the end of January would sort of blow away the dust from the solar panels, but they didn't, or at least it hasn't revived revived it. So this is sort of incredible, though, because it's a remarkable mission. 15 years into a 90-day mission, they've and it's taken out. It's only been taken out by one of the worst dust storms ever recorded on Mars. So they were pretty hardy. Spirit lasted, until 2011, and because now it's going into the Martian winter, where Opportunity is, the temperatures are getting lower. The chances of actually reviving it are pretty much dead.
Okay, so this is why you're saying probable, that they are going to try.
They think that it's getting less and less likely.
So does that mean like a proper formal end to that mission?
That mission will then end, yes. I mean, there are now other rovers on Mars, and since that, but these were the first two sort of big ones, and it's sort of, you know, they've been plugging away by themselves. For many years, much, much longer than they thought. And there's the scientists who, you know, when they signed up for these missions, these Spirit and Opportunity missions, and few of them realized that they'd still be working on it 15 years later, which is sort of incredible. And they've done tons of work. They've Opportunity was supposed to last 90 days. It ended up lasting nearly 5,000 days. Mm. It traversed a path 45 kilometers long, so that's quite a distance. Often driving backwards because its steering control overheated, so it just went backwards instead.
Okay.
As you do. It went to explore lots of craters. Its camera was still working perfectly. It revealed a lot of amazing science. So they think they found evidence of water in prehistory on Mars, they revealed that the periods of habitability, in other words, Earth-like conditions on Mars, extended far longer into the Martian past than they previously thought. Mm-hmm. It spotted veins of different minerals caused by evaporating water and things like that. So it was a big success, but it's sad that it's finally
coming to an end. Wow.
Yeah.
Do you feel sad?
Well, I remember when these things rolled out 15 years ago, because I'm a couple of years older than you. I remember watching it and seeing the first pictures they sent back. And so, yeah, it is a bit sad.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to end on that note, but we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
With more new science.
That was Dear Science.